She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 277, How to Take Action When Starting Out with Jenny Bike.
Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Bolin, your host, and it is time to do it your way.
Happy Thursday, you guys. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. I'm so excited because this weekend I'm going and attending Tony Robbins. Oh my gosh, I've heard so many different things, but I am so lit up about that. Actually, when I say lit up, I think of Suits from Lewis Litt. Anyway, I digress. Today's guest, we have an avid consumer technology and next generation retail strategist, Jenny Bike. Jenny currently serves as the CEO and co-founder of Orchard Mile, a newly launched digital shopping experience that is the first and only fashion platform that allows women to shop the full assortment of their favorite contemporary and luxury brands' sites updated daily in one place with the ease of one checkout. So if you think about it, it's like going to a shopping mall physically in person, but this is where it's all online. And in this podcast interview, we talk about the technology that she uses to make her fashion, the way that they serve up the fashion, smarter for their customers. We talk about her transition from corporate to entrepreneurship. Jenny received her master's degree from Harvard Business School in 2008 and also holds her undergrad in business from University of Texas in Austin. This is an incredible interview to hear Jenny's story. Like I said, she used to work at Burberry and other luxury brands, and then she had this idea and then made the transition and leap, as I like to say, into entrepreneurship. We also talk about finding out the importance of having a co-founder and the benefits that it can bring, and also discovering how she came up with a name for her business. And it's probably not what you think. It definitely wasn't what I anticipated to hear. And talking about creating the idea of Orchard Mile and making it into what it is today. So stay tuned. One of my favorite quotes and insights from this podcast episode was when Jenny said that once you make the decision to go, you're just ready to go. And I couldn't agree more. Here we are with Jenny Bike, how to take action when starting out. Jenny, I am so excited to dive into your business, Orchard Mile, and talk about your experience and, you know, what really triggered it for you to start your own company, especially talking about and seeing the background and your master's degree and just the experience that you've had before launching this business. So I'm really excited to dive into it. But first, let's start and tell us what exactly is Orchard Mile.
Hi, Amanda. I'm coughing. Excuse me.
You're fine.
We edited that out.
Yeah.
Hi, Amanda. It's wonderful, wonderful to be here with you. And a little bit about Orchard Mile. So I started this with three co-founders. And what we wanted to do was allow consumers to build their own shopping street. So we felt that there was too much telling women what to wear, even though it might not be right for them, right? Which the fashion industry generally likes to do. And we said, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could basically build your own virtual shopping street and just curate it towards all the things that you love? Mm-hmm. Almost like a Spotify of fashion, right? Your own personal playlist of fashion. So we give you the tools to curate your own shopping street from your favorite brands and boutiques all in one place with one checkout. So you can build your own experience, so you never have to filter again, which I think is probably the most annoying thing about shopping online is that you're constantly filtering, and we want to get you offline just as quick as you got online.
I love that. And I have so many follow-up questions to how the business works, and I know we'll dive into that. But give us a background story. Like, what were you doing before this, and what inspired you to launch Orchard Mile? And we'll talk about, you know, the early stages of it and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So I think I have maybe a different story from probably a lot of entrepreneurs that you have had on your show, simply because I wasn't super into being an entrepreneur. Like, it wasn't something that I said, absolutely. I woke up one morning and said, absolutely, I have to run my own company. This is going to be great. It actually was, so my mom was an entrepreneur when we were growing up, but she did it kind of out of our house. She borrowed $3,000 from my dad, completely bootstrapped it, and she worked in women's fashion jewelry for a little while, manufacturing the items. And I learned from her, but I also saw how hard it was. And I kind of said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to work as hard as my mom did, basically sleeping with her cell phone under her pillow every night, trying to do these calls with China. And she just never slept well. And so when I graduated, I came to New York. I worked on Wall Street. I wanted the big fancy job and the big fancy expense account and all the clients. So I got myself a really short haircut and walked around in these Hillary Clinton blue pantsuits like I owned the world. And it was just like, it wasn't me, but I was trying to walk into this persona that I felt like this is what adult women did, and especially adult women who went into business. And then I did that for 2 years, and I got a call from my good friend who was a roommate of mine at UT, University of Texas, is where I went to undergrad. And he said, you know, I started this business, you know, and I would like you to come in and help me organize it, because he was storing his receipts and invoices in trash bags at that point. And
oh,
he was
my gosh.
A men's and women's apparel line. I said, oh, yeah, I know something about spreadsheets. I can help you organize it. So I did that for 2 years, and that was at limited success, right? So I decided I didn't know what I was doing, and I went to business school kind of saying, you know, I tried the entrepreneurial thing, and it's not really for me. So here I went back into the corporate world again. I did a management consulting internship, and then I went and did digital marketing at Omnicom Group, which is a big advertising conglomerate. And I had worked there for 4 years, helping them build their digital data and analytics group. And all of a sudden, I got a LinkedIn message from Burberry's internal HR saying, you know, I love the work that you've been doing in digital. Would it be possible for you to come in and interview with us?
Oh,
and
my
help
gosh.
Strategy group, which sounds like the perfect job, right, for most women coming out of business school, or even men for that matter. But, you know, I had kind of dipped my toe in the fashion world back before, you know, and I said, oh no, I don't want to work in the fashion world. This is a kind of business where you have to gift Anna Wintour flowers for no reason. That's not something that I want to be a part of. It's a culture rather than a business, and I'm a business person. Of course, I got really, really kind of into everything that Burberry was doing. They were really at the forefront, being pioneers of digital marketing and digital activation. So I went and became their head of strategy for 2 years, running the Americas, both North and South America.
Dang, girl. Let's just pause there for a minute. I mean, that's no small feat.
It was a lot of work. I have a lot of trench coats, lots of good sample sales.
Ooh.
And made a lot of wonderful friends and learned a lot from a lot of the folks there who are just at the top of their game. And I got really obsessed in my job there because I was researching about how to grow our presence online. And I got obsessed with this idea of marketplaces, which is basically how could brands show their full collections, basically not be beholden to department store buyers, to basically acquire new consumers and have them really get into the brand. And brand storytelling was something that I've just been completely passionate about from day one. And that is how I kind of got sucked into this idea of, you know, Orchard Mile, and could every brand that mattered in the world create their own shop on Orchard Mile, this universal card and digital shopping street, to really, you know, have these one-on-one conversations that are very exciting with consumers.
How did you come up with the name? And then I want to talk about, well, actually, before we get into the name, but what was the transition? When was the moment that you had the idea for Orchard Mile, and what were some of the steps that you took, and what was that journey transitioning out of corporate America? What did that look like?
It was quick and not quick at the same time. And I say that because once you make the decision to go, you're just ready to go. You're just like, you cannot stop thinking about this idea. It just takes hold of you and you're done. But it took me a good 6 months while I was at Burberry to really get up the gumption to leave. And that's because, you know, obviously there are things like healthcare and all kind of, you know, real world things that everyone thinks about. And also there's an element of, do I have what it takes to make it? Mm-hmm. And even for the most confident person, there's always that voice that says, what if I don't make it? What's the worst that could possibly happen? And really putting on paper, what is the worst that could possibly happen? Am I going to be homeless? Was really the kind of ideas that went through my head. And once I realized, actually, no matter what, I will be fine, that's when you have enough freedom to go and pursue your dreams.
So what did you, when you came up with it, you worked through the mental piece of it. What were some of the actionable things that you did to start putting into place like Orchard Mile? I know that you talk about artificial intelligence and the way that you run the SaaS products for just how the entire website operates.
Right. I think one of the most important things, whether or not you have co-founders or not, is to understand what you're not so great at and what you also hate doing. And I think that's a real come to Jesus moment, especially for someone like me who, I'd done a little bit of finance, I'd done strategy, I'd done some marketing, right? And I really thought at the very beginning that I could do it all. And I wore all the hats, and I still feel like I wear more hats than I really should. And that can be a real Achilles heel for businesses when they want to grow. It's not a good thing to try to be too much of a jack of all trades, and recognizing how you want to grow and how fast you want to grow is certainly a thing, and getting the right talent in there to help you. So for me, I know that, for me, sometimes it's hard to ask for help I don't think I'm the best at sales, for example. And my co-founders are wonderful at that. So understanding that part of myself and understanding those holes that needed to be filled and what everyone's roles were going to be was really important to get this off the ground.
Mm-hmm. How did you go about choosing your co-founders and deciding to go into business with co-founders rather than doing it yourself?
I don't think I would have done it if it was just me. I don't think I would have had enough courage, I think. And it's so amazing to me when I see these singular entrepreneurs like Sarah Blakely or like Allie Greenberg, who started The Broad in Richmond. They just are solo folks, and they have so much courage. And I just admire them so much for that. My co-founders, it's so funny because we didn't know each other before I started Orchard Mile. Huh. And it wasn't just me that started it. We all had this kind of idea, and we fell in love with the idea in different angles at the same time. And it was almost through the serendipity that is New York City that we all kind of got together, knew each other. I like to joke because my co-founder, Julia, she overheard another co-founder of mine who was looking for the Wi-Fi passcode at Soho House. And she was pitching a client, and Julia overheard her talking about this universal card and said, "This is amazing. I want to be part of this company." And she kept on coming to the workspace, even though we kept on saying, "There is no job for you." Mm. It was kind of persistence that makes her so wonderful at sales, actually. That
someone who is definitely willing to overhear something and not shy away from being like, "By the way, I overheard your conversation, and I'm going to tell you this."
Yeah, she's not shy. She's an athlete. She's a true champion, and she just barrels through it, and that's what we needed. So even though we kept on saying there isn't a job for you, she persisted, and that kind of persistence allowed her to really be a co-founder in this business.
Walk us through what the first 6 to 12 months looks like of being fully committed. You're Orchard Mile. You're out of Burberry. Take us back to those first 6 to 12 months.
Well, it was very, very exciting. It was probably the giddiest time, very much the honeymoon phase, as many of your listeners know, because you're just brimming with ideas and you think that everything is going to be not easy, but that you have everything to solve it. And everyone's so excited about being there. And it's not that it's not that same way 3.5 years later, but you are a little bit more seasoned, and we've got some gray hairs now, literally, and we know what the risk management factors are to what is easy and what is difficult. It's kind of like, what do we know about the hard things, right? And in the beginning, what's unusual about Orchard Mile is we were funded from day one with retail veterans investment dollars. And so that allowed us to hire the best in design talent. Red Antler helped us out with our design, and they're responsible for a lot of wonderful websites like Rent the Runway and Aloha, etc. So just being part of that group made us feel very, very special. But it didn't alleviate some of the tough things that were still there. You still need a great tech team. You still need to learn how to manage people. You still need to convince people to come on board. You still need to raise money. You still need to figure out how to attract consumers at a very attractive and efficient marketing rate, right? Mm. So what does that all mean? How do you pull that together without unlimited resources? I mean, we were, as some people say, we were competing against some of the biggest names in the world that had been valued at $1 billion. Like, how are you going to go up against that space, and how do you differentiate? Those were things that were always very worrisome, and they're still worrisome today. I'm not going to lie to you. I think that you're constantly trying to stay one foot ahead, because even if you have the best in technology, which we do, you're only about 14 months ahead of someone first engineering that technology and getting four steps ahead of you. So living with a bit of paranoia is part of the entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. I mean, and especially in a world of technology, it just changes so quickly, and someone's working on it around the clock all the time. And if you don't keep one step ahead, I mean, you either align with them or you fall behind them. And it's crazy. When was your, I call it OSM. So it's an oh shit moment. When did you have, tell us one of those moments.
Oh my gosh. One. I mean, there are a litany of them. I'm so glad you asked that question, because I do think that there is a myth of entrepreneurship that it's so glamorous and it's so easy, and you know, that there's so much money in it and everything. But the reality is that most businesses don't have money thrown at them, and that even if they do, it's still hard. It's still hard. And every decision is very kind of gut-wrenching. And so one of our examples is that, you know, one year I had two of our key software engineers quit at the same time because they just got recruited with better offers, and I couldn't match that salary at that particular point in time. It's not that they didn't love the company. We're still all friends on Instagram, but it's just one of those things where they had to do what was right for their family. And all of a sudden, when the rug gets pulled out from under you at Christmas time, when everyone's on vacation, and also you have to meet sales budgets for a retail business, right? Christmas is the most important time of the year. Yeah. It's one of those things where I literally thought I was going to have a heart attack.
that would definitely give you something to stay awake for sure.
Yeah, and how to solve out of it. I mean, it's so funny because in the first 6 months, every day was so fraught with all these highs and all these lows. And I think every entrepreneur goes through that. But what happens now is that no matter how high or how low it is, it's all kind of normalized into this central base, like a median now, where I don't get too excited anymore. And it's kind of not so fun to say that. Like, I don't get so excited about anything anymore, and I don't get too down about anything anymore, because I know that time passes and that you're just going to get over it. So there's really no point in just getting overly excited about every which way.
Yeah. You know? Oh, no, I mean, it's almost your emotions level out, and something that, I mean, really, it's okay. I could expend all this energy freaking out about something, or I could manage it and use that into actually solving the problem versus getting bent out of shape. And then even in the wins, it's like celebrating the small wins, but not going crazy where everything's great and then everything's terrible and everything's great. I mean, that's where the contrast happens, and you create this high and low and this cyclical thing, where if you can learn to be in the middle of it and go with the flow, and it just, yeah, it's such a better experience. How do you then, so I know when you go to the website, you have all these brands, it's as if you're shopping, curating your own like shopping experience, like you said. In terms of inventory, do you guys communicate then on the back end with these brands and their own stores, or you guys have to bring inventory and then you are housing it somewhere in a distribution center, in which then you have to manage that whole supply chain experience?
Wow, Amanda, you know a lot about retail. I'm really impressed.
I had 1 year in Target as an executive team leader right after college. I was the best. I call it like boot camp after graduation, because you learn so much and they just throw you in and you're drinking from a fire hose the entire time. And just when you get comfortable, they go, here's another position, you're going to change. But yeah, I'm really fascinated, because I know listening to podcasts and retail is changing so much. And especially, I mean, I was listening to Bloomberg podcast about tariffs and like all the designer and the clothes and how it's disrupting the entire retail industry, and so many brick and mortars are closing. So now you have this online experience. How do you guys control that that supply chain on the back end?
Absolutely. So that's a great question. We are a marketplace, so we're completely drop shipped. And so it's a platform effectively where we incorporate and we bring in the digital assets, so the e-commerce inventory in its entirety of our brand, over 170 brands direct and 437 total at this current point in time, we bring in all of their e-commerce sites. So we clone their sites and we all into a consistent digital mall environment. And we have a mechanism where we place the orders on behalf of the consumer in real time as they're typing it onto the brand partner sites, and they drop ship to the end consumer. So when you go through our experience, when you build My Mile, or you can just shop the site directly like any other site, you'll see that at the end at checkout, it says shipping from Bottega Veneta, shipping from MGMI, or shipping from DBF, for example. And you can choose, you know, what, how you want to, if it's same day or next day, the kind of delivery types you want, but it goes direct from the brand's DC. And what we love about that is that it actually is quite green. What is difficult about the fashion space is, number one, what's not green about it is that there's too much sale inventory and there's a glut of product. So, I mean, I think that brands need to get smarter about, you know, just-in-time manufacturing, but how do they do that unless they have the data? So we believe in data sharing. And also, when that DC from the brand directly drop ships to the consumer, it's, you know, skipping a step. It doesn't have to ship to a warehouse, and the warehouse has to ship to the consumer, and then repackaging, et cetera. It's all direct, and that's what we love about that. So hopefully that'll take one step out of that distribution process, which is taking a step out of that carbon footprint.
Yeah. And then, so when they, if a brand on their website is, something's on sale, then your website is set up to then mirror that sale as well?
100%. And oftentimes the brands, because they gain more vertical margin with us, we have exclusive sales that aren't available anywhere else, because we have those direct relationships with the brands, and they love our consumers, and we're always like doing surprise and delight. Cause we actually think, Amanda, that, you know, shopping is not that fun anymore. Like, when we used to go to like RTA and you like got that glass of champagne, and they still do it, but that kind of feeling where, oh wow, like I got this random gift and they're really recognizing me as a human being and someone who, you know, could potentially be meaningful to their business. I feel like that doesn't happen in brick and mortar, and it definitely does not happen in digital. So that's what we're trying to bring back, is that offline online connection. We do sampling all the time. We do, you know, all sorts of kind of fun events and, you know, invitations to cool happenings in and around our cities. Our brand supply a lot of great experiences. So we want to get people into the Orchard Mall experience, which is not just buying stuff. Mm-hmm. That is pretty much commoditized. We think everyone has too much stuff. It's like, how do you make it fun again? And that's our whole ethos.
Oh, I love that. I'm totally there from a minimalist perspective. I'd rather have fewer nicer things than having a closet where I'm overwhelmed by decisions and choices. And even the shopping experience, I think I was saying this on another podcast, like I get overwhelmed when I go shopping because I didn't know my style, and I would buy clothes that I thought I liked, and then they get in my closet and I wasn't really excited about it. So even just learning my style and what I feel comfortable and confident in even helps me and gets me even more excited to now shop, because I know what I'm looking for versus going into this abyss of like, where do I even begin?
Exactly the same way. So many people are surprised to hear that when I say I actually hate e-commerce shopping, because I don't think it's fun. It's very left-brained, you know, it's kind of functional. You're like filtering forever and you just want to kill
yourself. Yeah, you could just keep going and going and looking and shopping and finding out more information and researching to where then you just get exhausted and fatigued from that whole experience. So, yeah.
People push me, you know, like one of the things that we love about the marketplace experience is that we're inventory agnostic. So that means that we didn't buy a lot of that white sweater that everyone's pushing, so we don't have to get rid of it. So meaning that, you know, I can really suggest things that are right for you as opposed to things that are right for me to sell, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's, and you, I love that you guys have an integrative experience platform too, because you're online, but then you also do the in-person to create the full experience. So I know, like, for actionable items, one of the things that you said is understanding the cash flow of your business. Expand a little bit more on that. What was an experience that allowed you to, or that, you know, inspired you to put that down as one of the three things, actionable items, you would recommend new business owners doing?
Yeah, I was thinking about one of my mentors and someone who I admire greatly, Marla Beck, who started Blue Mercury. And she's been very open about her experience with raising money and private equity and the markets closing, et cetera, because she started Blue Mercury in 99. So it was kind of like, okay, we rode the dot-com wave and also the bust. And I think a lot of people, my boyfriend included, thinks that we're in for a bear market. So what that means is that you have to really be smart about, like, if you want to survive, do you be conservative with your cash flow, and you can plan for the best. You can say, like, okay, we're hitting our numbers 30% month over month. It's going to be wonderful. But that cash burn to get to that top line, like, what does that mean? And if you're, say you need money for that next raise, say one of your investors is potentially late coming in with the dollars, or any number of things could happen, right? The markets close, people change their mind. It is their prerogative to do so. But are you prepared? You're still thinking positively, but are you prepared for the worst case scenario? And I don't think that people, I mean, that's the number one reason why businesses fail. They just run out of money, at least in this digital space. And so trying to balance that with being a visionary and being, like, you know, forward thinking is all part of it. It's part of that tension that it makes this job very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Because you are incorporating not just your business, you're incorporating the market. What's the political situation? Where's the economics and everything going in, and regulation and all of that stuff too? What is, I know you mentioned also too, define what success looks like, where to focus your energy because you can't do everything, and crawl, walk, run looks like. So tell us more about that, defining success, and how do you guys define success at Orchard Mile?
Well, the number one reason I wanted to start a company is that I just thought it'd be fun to create a culture that focused on values that I value. So, for example, one of our core pillars is being egalitarian. That means that, like, actually no one is taking credit for things that they didn't do, which I think you'll find is rife in a lot of large companies. I hope that our company doesn't become that way, right? We incentivize people for actually 20% of the performance is about how much you helped other people rather than yourself. So it's a little bit different than a 360 review. So for me, success personally just looks like, is my team happy? Do they like working here? Are we helping them grow their career? Like, it's about people, not about dollars for me. And that's what success looks like. I mean, for the business, I mean, if I think about our investors, we opened up our first brick and mortar, almost perma space in Martha's Vineyard. In Edgartown. And so our brands, for the most part, were so excited to participate. So being a platform that the brands love, because usually there's a lot of tension, right, between the channel and the brands are getting behind Orchard Mile in major ways. And so being a great partner and making sure they're happy is obviously how we define success, because without the brands, we're nowhere. And we recognize that. Mm-hmm. And in terms of crawl, walk, run, there's so many cool things that we have in the pike, whether I know my PR team will kill me if I start talking too much about them early, but actually, you know, we're so excited about the kind of feedback that we've gotten. And, you know, there also is room to improve. So every time we get a consumer review that's like, oh, you know, this thing, you know, maybe was late or wasn't exactly what I expected, we take it very seriously. And that's, I actually get copied on every single consumer email that comes in to concierge@orchardmile.com. So, and anyone who is unhappy, I actually respond to myself. So it's a way for us to keep connected. And obviously that's not scalable, but it helps me, like, understand what's going on.
Let's go. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I love this question, and I tell it to anyone who asks me it. So I was a student at Harvard Business School back in the day. And of course, you know, I think that I am going into my consumer marketing professor's office hours to ask for career advice. And she's so cool. Her name is Youngmi Moon. She's Korean, like me, Korean American. And I just thought we had a real connection. And I had printed out my resume, and I really wanted to look good. So I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, just waltzing into her office saying, "Hey, young me," and I sat myself down. I gave her my resume, and I said, "I would love your advice on what I should be doing." And I was just expecting her to say, "Wow, I love your resume. Like, oh my gosh, there's so many wonderful things you could be doing with your career, and, like, here are the 14 ideas I have for you." But she probably spent at least 5 minutes in silence just looking at my resume. And then she quietly put it down and pushed it across the other side of her desk and just wasn't smiling at all. So I was really scared.
Oh my goodness.
She's going to say something like, you're going to fail. Like, this is horrible. You know, you need to get out of here. You're an imposter. And she kind of just quietly looked into my eyes and said, I think your resume, what it tells me is that you need to stop eating your spinach and start focusing on what makes you you. And so if she was looking down my resume, and what she was saying was, you're spending so much time trying to shore up your weaknesses. Like, you went into finance and then you did a management consulting kind of internship, and you're trying to check all these boxes and be so perfect. At the end of the day, the thing that's going to make someone succeed is doing what they love and doing what they're good at. And I was trying to keep all the options open, and I just figured that, you know, if I worked hard enough, I'd float to the top. Mm-hmm. And she says, that is absolutely not what good careers are built out of. You need to understand your weaknesses and understand where you can win. It's like a strategy game. So I just thought that was the best piece of advice, and I still struggle with it because optionality is very sexy, you know, wanting to always have all these doors open. And I always joke with my co-founders that Orchard Mile is the only thing that I've ever committed to really in my whole life, because there is no easy escape hatch open, right? You really are married.
Yes.
To your business.
I love how you said optionality is sexy, and especially I think entrepreneurs are engineered with ideas. And because of that, when we pick one, we still have all these other ideas and things. And sometimes we feel as if we're trapped, but it's, yeah, really committing and driving into that business.
And solving the problems, right? I think it's probably very similar. I mean, I hope that, you know, one day I'll be a great wife, or I hope that I will one day be a great mother, because I've learned these experiences, which I think are quite, quite similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So let's go back to, how did you guys come to Orchard Mile, the name?
Okay. So it's actually, romantically, what we say is that it's from Orchard Road in Singapore and Miracle Mile from Chicago, right? Those are iconic shopping streets. But the other 50% of the reason behind that name, which I kind of rarely talk about, is that it's actually SEO unique, which is something to...
Savvy.
Yeah, because there are no other Orchard Miles, really, you know. So that's why I always used to wonder, like, why is Tumblr not spelled with an E? You know, why is that missing? It's to be SEO unique. And I don't think most people understand that you save a lot of money when you can figure out a very, very unique name.
And you don't have to spend money on Google search keywords.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I wanted to call it My Mile, right, which is the name of our hero product. But I mean, just think of how much SEM bidding you'd have to win in order to be My Mile on top, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, Jenny, let's pivot a little bit. We're going to go into what I like to call rapid fire. So these are meant to be quick and fast, whatever comes to your mind. So are you ready?
I don't know. I'm kind of
nervous. It's pretty famous. What is your all-time favorite book?
The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins.
Ooh, I've never heard of that.
It's really good. I mean, it's not too heavy. It's very, very engaging. I would say it's in the realm of popular science.
Okay. What is a non-negotiable for you?
It's a toss-up between sleep and food.
How many hours a night do you get?
Eight.
Nice. I love it. I'm a total fan of long sleep hours. What is the best $100 purchase or less someone can make in their business?
Sharing your Google Cal that's 100% open.
Love it. And then what are some of your favorite software tools that you use?
For my business, it would be Full Story, Google Analytics, for example, Freshdesk for customer service. For personal use, I love the MindBody app. It's great for people who can't make decisions but like to do it in real time.
Ooh, what's Full Story?
Full Story is amazing. So it's probably been the number one tool that allows us to really investigate problems on the site. So it basically films not the persons, because that would be obviously invasion of privacy, but the mouse movements on every single session that's happening on our site.
What? So
it's, Yeah. So if for some reason you notice that, the shipping page is dropping off for whatever reason, you can really go into those full story sessions and identify why that's happening, like where people get confused.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's not like I'm not that surprised, but that's really cool. And that sounds awesome.
It's awesome. We just get entranced. We just watch them all day long.
Wow. I mean, yeah. Technology is fantastic. That's amazing. And then you mentioned Freshdesk. What is Freshdesk?
Freshdesk is a customer management tool. It's partly a CRM, but also it's kind of like Zendesk. I would say it's a competitor to Zendesk.
Okay.
But for us, it's much more intuitive.
Amazing. Well, this has been fantastic. Jenny, is there anything else that you would like to share with my listeners? Anything that comes to mind that maybe I didn't touch on?
I think the one thing that your listeners probably know already is no matter what happens with your business, it's not about the end result necessarily, but it's about how you make people feel, whether it's your partners, your employees, your investors. And I think that's really easy to lose sight of when you're so burdened in the weeds and you're just trying to make something happen. But don't forget to like lift your head up and understand how people are feeling around the table, which was never intuitive to me. I work on it every day because I think I'm very like black and white. But sometimes things, you know, that don't go said are just assumed. And it's better to kind of just check in, almost like your family, check in, see how people are feeling, is what I would leave people with.
Mm-hmm. Especially building the team and the culture. I love it. Jenny, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your journey, taking time out of your day. I really appreciate it. Can you share with my listeners where they can learn more about you and learn more about Orchard Mile?
Absolutely. Feel free to LinkedIn me at Jenny Bike, and JENNIE, and also Orchard Mile, Orchard like the tree and Mile like kilometer. We also bought Orchid Mile because so many people got confused.
Ooh.
Back to people to Orchard Mile. So that's something to
that's a great tip too. If you have a website that is close to, you know, so if people constantly mistype in, then you can redirect it to your actual site.
Yes. And if any of your listeners are out in Martha's Vineyard, come visit our pop-up store out there in Edgartown.
Amazing. Thank you, Jenny. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, Amanda. It was so fun talking to you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidithirway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.